In the sweltering summer of 1988, as Yellowstone burned and the Mississippi River shrank to a trickle, NASA scientist James Hansen stood before the Senate and delivered a verdict that should have changed everything. The greenhouse effect has been detected, and it is changing our climate now. His testimony made front pages nationwide and catapulted climate change into public consciousness. What most Americans didn't realize was that Hansen's warning represented not a scientific breakthrough, but the culmination of a decade-long struggle to alert humanity to its greatest existential threat. Nearly everything we understand about climate change today was already known by 1979. The tragedy is how close we came to solving it before powerful interests and human psychology derailed progress at the critical moment. The climate movement began in 1979 when environmental lobbyist Rafe Pomerantz discovered a government report warning of catastrophic climate effects from coal burning. With geophysicist Gordon MacDonald, he learned doubling atmospheric carbon dioxide could raise global temperatures 2 to 3°C, potentially creating continental dust bowls and melting Antarctic ice. Their carbon dioxide roadshow briefed Washington officials and reached President Carter's science advisor, who requested a National Academy of Sciences assessment. Meanwhile, NASA scientist James Hansen developed computer models predicting Earth's climate future after studying Venus's greenhouse effect. In 1979, these efforts converged when scientists gathered to assess climate predictions for the White House. Their conclusion? Earth would warm 3°C when carbon dioxide doubled, comparable to conditions 3 million years ago when Antarctica had beech trees and seas were 80 feet higher. The 1979 Charney Report established scientific consensus that human-caused climate change was real and potentially catastrophic. Exxon responded by launching a $600,000 annual carbon dioxide research program that research manager Henry Shaw called a very aggressive defensive program. The fossil fuel industry had encountered climate warnings before. Exxon's predecessor, Humble Oil, published research in 1957 acknowledging fossil fuels' contribution to atmospheric carbon. And physicist Edward Teller had cautioned oil executives about climate change that same year. The 1980 election of Ronald Reagan transformed the political landscape. His administration undermined environmental protections by appointing anti-regulation officials like James Watt to Interior and Ann Gorsuch to EPA, who cut the agency's budget by 25%. Reagan ignored warnings that fossil fuels could permanently and disastrously alter Earth's atmosphere. Meanwhile, Congressman Albert Gore Jr. emerged as climate change's champion, influenced by his Harvard professor Roger Revelle. As chair of an oversight subcommittee, Gore organized hearings where James Hansen testified that the planet had already warmed 0.4°C, oceans had risen 4 inches, and Antarctica had lost significant ice. Hansen warned they would see climate changes clearly larger than the natural variation within 10-20 years. By 1985, a sudden environmental crisis captured global attention. Scientists discovered a hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica. This vivid metaphor, actually a severe seasonal depletion, sparked immediate public alarm about increased skin cancer and ecological damage. The crisis demonstrated how quickly environmental policy could shift when the public perceived an immediate threat. The Reagan administration, despite previously citing scientific uncertainty, reversed course, proposing a 95% reduction in CFC emissions after the Antarctic findings were published. NASA scientist Robert Watson's animation showing a purple wound spreading across Antarctica made the invisible visible in ways carbon dioxide data couldn't. This visualization generated numerous headlines connecting to global warming. Senator John Chaffee moved beyond calling for research to demanding State Department negotiations with the Soviet Union on a global climate accord. By October 1987, shortly after nations signed the Montreal Protocol limiting CFCs, climate scientists gathered at a conference with newfound optimism. For a brief moment, solving climate change seemed not just possible, but inevitable. The summer of 1988 brought apocalyptic conditions nationwide. Alaska lost 2 million acres to fire, Yellowstone nearly a million. Nebraska faced its worst drought since the Dust Bowl. Wisconsin's rivers couldn't dilute sewage. Harvard closed due to heat for the first time. New York's streets melted amid peak murder rates. The Mississippi River ran at 1/5 capacity, prompting Jesse Jackson to pray in cornfields while a Sioux medicine man performed rain dances in Ohio. On June 22nd, as Washington hit 100F, Hansen informed Pomerantz about his upcoming Senate testimony. The next day, Hansen declared, "The global warming is now large enough that we can ascribe with a high degree of confidence a cause and effect relationship to the greenhouse effect, and it is changing our climate now." His testimony made national headlines, with public awareness reaching 68%. The issue entered presidential politics, with George H.W. Bush promising climate action. After Bush's inauguration, the IPCC began negotiating a global climate treaty. Secretary of State James Baker acknowledged, "We can probably not afford to wait until all of the uncertainties have been resolved before we act." This prompted Chief of Staff John Sununu to rebuke Baker, telling him to leave the science to the scientists and stay clear of this greenhouse effect nonsense. Baker, a former Houston oil lawyer, never spoke publicly about climate change again. Sununu, with his MIT engineering PhD, distrusted scientists who mixed policy with research, viewing them as part of an anti-growth conspiracy. When EPA Administrator Riley proposed a carbon emissions treaty, Sununu refused. In May 1989, the White House altered James Hansen's congressional testimony, downgrading findings to estimates, claiming causes were scientifically unknown and requiring climate legislation show immediate economic benefits. Gore compared this interference to Soviet censorship. By November 1989, at the Nordwick Climate Conference, American officials blocked emission freeze commitments. The final statement merely noted that many nations supported stabilization without specifics, leading environmental groups to condemn the outcome as a disaster. The fossil fuel industry's disinformation campaigns began after Hansen's 1988 testimony. Exxon's Duane Levine urged their board in 1989 to emphasize uncertainty in scientific conclusions while opposing limits on fossil fuels. The American Petroleum Institute followed suit, and by 1990, this became the global petroleum industry's position, supported by the Global Climate Coalition's recruitment of skeptical scientists. Responsibility extends beyond oil companies to the automotive industry, electric utilities, the U.S. government, and environmental groups. All knew about climate change decades ago. A 1953 New York Times article presciently noted, "Coal and oil are still plentiful and cheap in many parts of the world, and there is every reason to believe that both will be consumed by industry so long as it pays to do so." The decade from 1979 to 1989 represents our best missed opportunity to address climate change before it became a crisis. We had the science, understood the risks, and had political momentum, but lacked the collective will to overcome short-term thinking and powerful interests. Understanding this history isn't just about blame. It's about recognizing that each fraction of a degree matters in the climate fight ahead. Will we finally heed warnings that have sounded for over 40 years, or continue sleepwalking toward catastrophe?